Hello again, everybody. Welcome to a special edition, an appended edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We just recorded a show with Keith Franz on Friday. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing better now that we're sitting in seventh.
Yeah, so we
are looking at seventh.
We're gonna add this part to the beginning of the show, and then we'll after this you're gonna hear the full episode where we get into some of the prospects and your thoughts, and we argue about Mikal Bridges versus Knox, etc. But let's get an update on where we're at on the tankathon, and where do you think we're realistically going to end up? What are the options here as we move forward?
Well, the best option would probably be to sit Lowry for the two remaining games because Detroit just got beat by the Grizzlies today. They look like they're just done. They're just want to go home, want to get on their vacations, and they don't really care to be where they are. So that's kind of concerning. I do think we will finish seventh. I think we should drop this game to the Nets. I don't think sixth is possible. It would require the Kings beating either the Spurs or the Rockets, and then we'd also have to lose out just to tie with them. So I'm thinking seventh is the best case and also the most realistic.
So it is possible the Kings have the Rockets at home, and then by that time you hope the Rockets are going to be sitting the vast majority of their best players, so it is possible they could potentially lose that game. That's our only hope there, but you're right. Nothing matters unless we lose out, and I hope they're not even contemplating or thinking about playing Markkanen. I mean, that was the problem this entire time. If they would have sat him 2 weeks ago, we'd be in a much better, stronger position.
No, there's no debate there. I think Lowry looming fairly close to catching Dirk's three-point record for players over 7 feet tall in his rookie year may be why they can't keep him out. The kind of player and person that Lowry is, I'm sure he's like, no, I want to play. I want to get this, da-da-da. So I'm sure it's a very tough balancing act of keeping your future star happy and doing what's right for the team.
What about the Pelicans pick? So at best, what's the best case and worst scenario for both picks? You said six, right? So six is the best case for our own pick. What's the best case for the Pelicans pick, and what's the worst case scenario in both situations?
Worst case is looking like 21, unless Utah starts to lay an egg here as of late, which I don't believe they will. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They're one game ahead in the win and the loss column, so they would really have to mess up in order to fall into the middle of the Spurs, OKC, New Orleans three-way tie that we currently have. The Pelicans do have a harder schedule than everybody that they're tied with. The only team that has a comparable schedule and difficulty would be Denver, the team that we need to win the next two games. And Denver plays Portland and Minnesota. So if they beat Portland, I think we got a good chance. The Pelicans play the Clippers and the Spurs. It's very possible that we get 14th. All the other teams that I mentioned, San Antonio and Oklahoma, both play a team in the bottom five of the lottery as one of their two remaining games. So that should be a gimme.
So you think it's more likely the Pelicans win? If Pelicans fall out of the playoffs, than it is the Bulls to move up to six.
I'd say Bulls going to six is more unlikely than the Pelicans going to 14.
Okay. Yeah, seven would be fine. I'd be fine with that. They're going to get a good player there. You know, obviously that you want to get as high as possible. If Jaren Jackson then ends up getting picked at 16, at six, I'll be disgusted. But, you know, I think somebody's going to take Mo Bamba or, you know, one of those guys. I hope they take off our list, because I'm not a fan of Mo Bamba, and I know a lot of people are, but I think there's a couple guys that are going to go ahead of, you know, like a Bridges that I think, and I think Bridges will be better. So, you know, we'll see. At seven, no, they're going to get somebody good. So
let me get this correct, because I asked you this on Twitter yesterday, and I didn't get a response. You would take Mikal Bridges over Mo Bamba if they're both on the board.
I think Mo, yes, I would. I think Mikal Bridges is going to be a better pro than Mo Bamba. I don't think Mo Bamba is a modern-day center. I think he's a you know he's a defensive player, and I do not see his offensive ability or him developing into an offensive force in the league. And I don't think you can draft a guy who can't bring any offense. Whereas Mikal Bridges, I think, has a much higher ceiling on the offensive end than he's given credit for. He's already a good 3-point shooter, and that work ethic that he brings and the athleticism, I think he can develop into something better than just a guy who's a 3-and-D. I think he can take it to the rim. I think he could score. I know he's older. We all gotta, you know, think about that and factor that in. I've just never been impressed watching Mo Bamba outside of his ability to block shots. That's a very valuable asset. I'm not acting like that's bad, and I won't be devastated if we get him. I just think he's very limited to me on the offensive end of the ball. And for that, I don't really believe in taking a guy that high.
Okay, and I can understand that. But how many shots a game do you think Mikal Bridges is going to get with Lowry, LaVine, and Dunn ahead of him as, you know, 1A, 1B, 1C?
Yeah, well, we'll see where he develops, right, into that. Who knows where that's going to be, but he's going to get a significant amount of shots if he can hit the three. And that's what he looks like already, that he probably can do better than LaVine or Dunn, I think. You know, it's hard to kind of gauge where he's going to end up next year, but, you know, at 43% in college, he should be about 38%, which would put him at the lead on the Bulls. You know, I kind of brought this up today, is Valentine's their best 3-point shooter at 38% and change. They got to get better there. So if they draft Bamba and they don't add any additional shooting, I think they're going to be significantly hurt by that. I'm just not a big believer in Bamba. I know you love the guy. And
no, I, Knox is the only late prospect I would say that I have a bias or a quote-unquote love for. Bamba, I just see as a better fit for what we need. I think he has a higher ceiling. I would take Bamba over Mikal Bridges in a heartbeat.
Bamba is not strong at all. He's 220. Don't you? I see New Orleans Noel in him, like a lot of him in New Orleans.
I also see Rudy Gobert, different? Though.
Oh, he's nowhere near as big as Gobert. Gobert's got to be 240. He's got to be 240. And you think it's going to be easy just to gain 20 pounds of muscle?
No, but I have the same concerns with Mikal. He's 185, 190. I do have a better comparison than Snell for him today for you, one that you might not scoff at quite as much. Will Barton is somebody who's having a career year this year that I think that Mikal Bridges could project out to be.
He's a way better shooter than Barton. Barton's a 33% 3-point shooter, and he's not that good defensively. I think Bridges is going to be significantly better defensively. Gobert's 245. He's 25 pounds heavier than Bamba. I think Norland's Noel is a better comparison. And I mean, hopefully he's got a better attitude than Noel, because I think Noel is valuable if he wasn't such a – he didn't have so many kind of, it seems like, off-the-court problems.
Well, no, yeah, he just had the drug-related problem off
exactly,
the court, too.
Which is insane when you're going into an unrestricted free agency. He just cost himself some money. That's a horrible
thing. I don't know. I was just going to say, though, if I turned down, like, $60 million and it was looking like I might make, like, five next year – I probably might want some drugs, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, but do you think that helped your effort? I mean, oh my gosh.
No. That was a joke, Fred.
Yeah, but there's no way anybody's – he just cost himself a ton of money. There's got to be a ton of questions about him. I'd be shocked if he got a multi-year deal, maybe a two-year deal, maybe a three-year deal. But, oh, my gosh, what does that say about him if he's not, you know, disciplined enough to stay off – the stuff, knowing the consequences of his actions. It's just a horrible sign.
Oh, yeah, knowing that that's going to cost him even more millions. Yeah,
horrible sign. And he's got a problem, you know, with Dallas, and we've kind of gone ad nauseum on that. But I like him as a player. Like, you know, if Bamba ends up being like him as a player but with a better attitude, that's good. I just think the Bridges, you can drop him into the starting lineup now. And I know he's older, and he definitely has a lower ceiling, but he's definitely higher than as a player right now. How did Bamba translate to anything as a team? Texas is nothing but a disappointment. You know, that's another thing I always like to look at is, you know, how did that guy who's allegedly so good change that team? They're a massive disappointment.
You could ask certain things about Oklahoma and Trae Young, but, you know, they were the best players on bad teams, so it's hard to judge them, obviously. I agree with you in a sense. Mikal was on the most NBA-oriented college system at Villanova. They play, you know, a pace and space He had a great point guard. He had a great coach. He had a great teammates. They spread the floor. So it can go both ways, in my opinion on that. You can knock somebody for being the best player on a bad team, and you can knock somebody for being really good on a great team because they had help and they had the support and they had the structure and foundation to be great. So that can go both ways. My only concern is you're drafting a guy knowing that you're looking at him to be a role player in the top 10, and he's 22.
Yeah,
there's somebody
like again,
Jacob Evans in the 20s.
You're pigeonholing him as a role player, and I think that's, you know, he's 3-and-D, and I just think he's more than that. I really do. I think he's got the ability to be more than that. He's more skilled offensively than just a role player. You know, a guy who's just going to hit threes. He can dribble. I think he can take it to the rim much better than that. That's where my biggest disagreement is that I keep on hearing that all he can do is shoot threes and play D. First of all,
oh no, I was yeah. Watching film earlier. He dunked down a whole entire team. So that's not really a concern. The athleticism's definitely there.
Yeah. So, you know, to wrap
this. No, it's not a pick I could be upset with. If we end up with Mikal Bridges, I'm not going to be upset. I obviously just have my own preferences.
Let's wrap this baby up with your predictions of what's going to happen.
I think we lose to the Nets. We guarantee at least being tied at seventh. Like I said, I am scared that we are going to beat the Pistons and end up tied and not in sole possession of seventh. I do have hope for the Pelicans to fall out. I think the Clippers, unlike a team like Detroit, are going to come out with the, you know, screw you, you're in our spot, we're going to beat you today kind of mentality instead of the I want to go home mentality. So I think it is very possible that we pick 7-14, which would be amazing.
Yep. And so,
and if it's 7-17, that's not the worst thing either.
So I had this conversation with Doug Tonis. So I'd like to get your opinion before we shut off the first part one. Doug, I asked what would you do differently, and Doug basically made the case that he wouldn't assign Nico, and it really tanked this year. And then you lose that second number one pick. Do you agree with that assessment? Would you think the Bulls have been better off just, you know, let Nico walk and just going for a full tank this year without that second pick?
No, I don't think it was the wrong move re-signing Nico. It would have been the wrong move if we didn't get anything for him and he hurt us, but nobody expected Nico to do what he did coming into the season. And until he left, until the other night against Golden State after he shaved his beard, he's had career lows across the board. So I don't think it was a bad move. People are also forgetting that there was a fight that led to Nico being out for, you know, the first 23 games, and Portis missed 8 games because of that. Nwaba was injured, and Dunn had the problem with his hand. There's a lot of dumb luck that happened to put us in the position that we are currently. It could have been much worse, and obviously there's things that they could have done to improve the tank, like deciding earlier that it was time to start trying to lose games in the fourth quarter, not waiting until after the All-Star break. But I don't see how you can say signing Nico is the direct result of why what happened and we are here, because Nico came back and had a 7-8 game streak.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy with how it worked out. I do wish they would have shut down marketing earlier. I think that would have solved the problem, and we would have been up, you know, near 4 or had an opportunity there.
Well, no, because Atlanta and Memphis both won today. So I believe they're both over 24 wins, or at 24 wins. Let's see.
Yeah, we could have ended up with the fourth pick. Or
yeah,
third.
We could have been at fourth.
Yeah, so.
No, yeah, we'd be tied for third currently. If we did not win those 3 games in a row, we would be 24-57 tied in third place.
You know, so that's my only regret, is they didn't sit Markkanen earlier. And if the NBA had a problem with it, you can make an easy argument that, you know, Markkanen's been playing since, you know, all summer with the national team. He's been playing basketball straight for a year. We're going to shut him down. Because the last
and the back spasm started at the beginning of the season, too. So it's not like it's something that they, you know, just made up out of thin air and were like, oh, big guy's got back spasms, can't play him.
I mean, compared to what Atlanta's doing, give me a break. I mean, You know, the guys are shutting down for no reason at all. So give me a break. You know, I don't think anything would have happened. And that's my only regret, is I think he was the reason they won those games. But here we are. You know, let's not get angry until we see how this kind of flushes out. We still have a chance at number one. You know,
oh, no, exactly. We could be pitching a fit for no reason and going to end up in the top three or with number one. It's all irrelevant until the lottery. All the mocks, all the conversations, once the lottery hits, then it gets real.
That's right, my man. Well, we're recording this on Sunday night. You'll probably hear it on Monday. Until then, this is part one. Get ready for part two coming up right after this. Until then, enjoy the week, and let's go. Let's lose Bulls for the last time, hopefully in a long, long time. What say you, my man?
Let's lose two and get on to next season, to greener pastures.
Amen, brother. All right, have a great week, my man. Look forward to talking to you next weekend.
Yep, talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Vons on. Keith, how you doing, my man?
Doing great.
At
Knox committed.
Oh, he did. He did. That's great news. So we got another player in the draft, one that you're very high on. It sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, if the Bulls pick 9th, 8th, in that range, if the Bulls take Kevin Knox, you'd be quite very happy with that pick.
I would not be disappointed. Obviously, I'd much rather have, you know, a prospect like Bamba fall to us in that range than, you know, try to maneuver up to get Knox as well with the Pelicans pick. But either way, I will be happy with one of those two.
For our knowledge, Knox, where do you kind of project him at? Is he more of a power forward or a small forward in the NBA?
I have heard some people with concerns that he's more of a stretch four than an athletic 3-and-D wing. The way he moves off the ball, I feel he's a three. I don't really have any concerns about it. He may be a tweener, but in this new age NBA, being a tweener is a good thing. Lowry's a tweener. He's got the size of a center, the skill of a small forward, and he falls right in the middle of the power forward. So I don't see that being too personal.
What do you like most about Knox, and where do you see him? Is it his shooting ability defensively? I mean, where is he plus, and where are his weaknesses?
He's a three-tier scorer. He can score outside, mid-range, and inside. He's very good off the ball, which would make him a perfect fit for what we're looking for, considering our biggest issue outside of defense is usage. We can't figure out who should have the ball most, who should, you know, be taking the most shots. So somebody like Knox, who can weave his way in and out of traffic without the ball on his hand and find himself a nice shot, it's kind of into a piece of what we're missing for the small forward there. At 6'9", I don't have too many concerns with him being a true small forward. Maybe his lateral quickness is in question by some scouts that I've seen. But obviously the Bulls can gauge that in a private workout better than they can watching film.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching him. He's one of the few guys in the top 15 I haven't seen enough of. I definitely need to see more film on him before I could give my blessing. I'm strongly in the camp, the Bridges camp right now. I think it's really interesting. Mikal now is kind of probably surpassed Miles for me. I think Miles has the higher ceiling. He's a great, you know, defense. I think he's got great defensive ability potentially. You know, just a physical. He's very athletic. Miles Bridges, that is. Mikal, also similar. Probably not as athletic. Probably not as high of a ceiling. But, you know, I brought this up in several tweets. 29% three-point shooting as a freshman. 43%. As a junior, to have that kind of increase and to see that kind of improvement is a testament to an incredible work ethic. He's got 7'2 wingspan. I think he's going to be a fantastic NBA player, and he's a quote unquote 3-and-D. And everybody tries to, I think, diminish him or kind of pigeonhole him by saying that. And I'm like, in response. That's what the NBA is now. You can't have enough of those guys at 3 and D. So what is your take on Mikal Bridges? Do you like him? If the Bulls pick him up, obviously you're probably siding a little bit on Knox. But between him and Miles Bridges, which one do you prefer?
I think I go Miles. Although Miles is also, once again, in the question of being a tweener. Is he a small forward? Is he a power forward? But he's 20, so he's 2 years younger than Mikal. Although we didn't see much progression from his freshman to his sophomore year in regards to stats, which can be kind of concerning. You wanted him to take another big leap. Maybe that leap's still in there. But those extra 2 years, he was at a very prestigious school like MSU. I don't know how Izzo and them messed it up in the tournament. Mm-hmm. But I like Miles. I like his character. I like his attitude a lot. I've watched a lot more of Miles closely than I have Mikal. I kind of chalk a little bit of Mikal's success up to having a point guard like Jalen Brunson, having a complete team in Villanova and a NBA-like system. So, to me, I really can't be upset with any of the small forwards that they grab, rather. Mikal, to me, is the safe pick. I don't think you're going to get much more of a ceiling. You've seen me on Twitter compare him to Tony Snell. I think he's going to fall right into the Tony Snell category. He'll skip the awkward Chicago period and go straight to the Milwaukee $10 million a year 3-and-D player, but I don't see him ever being anything more than that.
I will counter with this. Miles Bridges just turned 20 on March 21st. Mikal Bridges is still 21. He'll be 22, I think, at the end of August. So he is, you know, almost a year and a half, 2 years older than Miles. But Miles Bridges went from 38% shooting the three, which is what Mikal shot in his sophomore year, to 36. He actually went down. And it is a mile of difference between shooting 43% from three and 38 to 36%. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you consider that the best team in the NBA shoots the three at 39% rate, it's Golden State, and the worst team shoots it at 30%, that's Phoenix. That's only 9 percentage points. So that's the kind of window we're talking about from best to worst. From 43 to 38, 36 is a significant difference. So I love the way the kid, Mikal here, his length, I think he's got defensive ability from day one. If you combine him with, you know, just playing with Dunn, I think that's going to be a plus that will make him significantly better than Tony Snell. I got to disagree with you on the Tony Snell comparison. I think he's going to be a much better ball player. You know, where does he max out? Is he going to be as high as Bridges can go? I take Bridges as an athlete, he's significant, probably better, but you know, he may never reach the heights that Mikal has. He definitely hasn't in college in his second year. So it'll be interesting to see who they end up with. If they end up ninth and they end up with either of those two guys, I'll be elated. I think both of those two, Miles and Mikal, will be better than players picked ahead of him, including Mo Bamba. Trae Young will probably go ahead of him. A lot of these players I see going are predicted to go ahead. I think that Miles or Mikal, or possibly both.
What is your definition of better, though? Because by definition, Kyle Kuzma is having a better season than Lauri Markkanen. But he was drafted in the 20s.
No, he's not,
because
though.
He's...
I don't think he is. I mean,
statistically, you can make the argument.
Yeah, Kuzma's gone down significantly in the second half of the year. Quite a bit.
But Kuzma is also an older, more established prospect that was taken in the 20s. His transition to the NBA is supposed to be easier, because if it wasn't, he shouldn't be getting drafted. And that's what my counter with Mikal is. If you look at Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, the only prospect 3-and-D-wise that you could compare Mikal to in their early 20s, but later 20s for a rookie, would be Paul George, who went 10th. He's the only one out of the prospects that you can hope Mikal reaches a ceiling of that went in the top 10 of the draft. And that's not because teams under-evaluated them. It was because they said, all right, they're already this age. They're supposed to be there. This guy can get there. And that's the thing with the draft. It's not always You're drafting for potential. You take the guy at 20, that's 22 years old in the top 10. Yeah, you're going to get a safe pick. You're going to get exactly what you thought you were getting, and there's not going to be any tomfoolery. But you're really not going to get much more out of him.
Yeah,
and that's the thing with the draft. It's all risk over reward, and obviously you got to pick your spots. But I think being in the top 10 probably for the last year, hopefully for the last year here, you got to take the big swing. You can't take the safe pick.
I think we're getting a little bit caught up. We're acting like it's like 3 years difference. He's 21. He's 21. Hold on. Between Knox, it is. For Knox, it is. And then also Jaren Jackson. Who are the two players that are actually going to be 18, I think, on draft night?
Knox and JJJ.
So not Knox and Jaren Jackson. And I love Jaren Jackson. He's definitely my, you know, prospect that I would take ahead of any of these guys that we're discussing. But he's probably not going to be available when the Bulls pick. So I do understand, like, 18 and, 21. That's a massive difference. Miles Bridges is a sophomore. You know, it's like he's 20. He just turned 20. And then Mikal's going to be 22. 2 years, it's more like a year and a half. I don't know. I just think, like, people kind of take it for granted that players are going to make that kind of jump that Mikal did in his 3 years. And that's rare to see a guy take an improvement like that. And I think making decisions just based on age, according to that logic, we would have never taken Jimmy Butler or Taj Gibson. Or there's a lot of players that have been drafted.
But they were taken in the late first, Fred. That's the point that I'm getting at.
Yeah.
The top 10, the lottery, is generally the one-and-dones, the two-year players.
But that's a mistake. Like, not it always. Was a mistake to take Butler 30. It was a mistake to take Taj Gibson in the 20s. It was a mistake. You know, I think for a lot of those players that fall, Kuzma, it was a mistake. If you redrafted all those players deserve to be picked higher. I think they get discounted. The only discount, if is there any doubt if Bridges was 19, he would be a top five pick? If Mikal.
But that's 3 years worth of training, school, dedication. Anything can happen in 3 years, and that's my thing. Knox's floor is starting at 35% from three-point land. He's got 3 years to reach 40. He's bigger. He's younger. But that's just myself. I think we have to take the big swing, take a risk, take the most potential, playing it safe. Last time we're going to be in the heart of the lottery here isn't the way to progress.
Well, they definitely did that with Markkanen, and that worked out well. Let's hope we can replicate that this year. Hopefully we can get to 7. Right now, let's get into this now. You know, right now, they've won 3 in a row. What a complete disaster. And I know everybody's angry and everybody wants to play management, as you know, as we kind of talked about off the air. I was at the game on Saturday against the Wizards, and that was the biggest dog performance I've ever seen from a quote-unquote contender in my life. You know, Ryan not in the NBA, Archie not in the NBA, and it was Felicio was out there. They had Grant out there, and they outscored the starters for the Wizards 26-19 in Q4. At some point, you got to be angry at these bum teams that the Bulls are beating with their third and fourth string. So, you know, it sucks though. No doubt about it. They should have shut Markkanen down a week ago. He shouldn't play for the rest of the season because he's the guy that, you know, why they're winning. But that said, here we are. What's the realistic positioning we're going to get to? And how is that going to be done? And then I want to also talk about the Pelicans and where they're likely to end up. So let's start with the Bulls.
Start with the Bulls. It's pretty simple. If we lose out, we could even potentially get up into a tie for sixth if Sacramento wins 2 games. By losing out, no matter what, Brooklyn will be behind us, so we move up.
Does Sacramento have two winnable games? Is that possible?
They have the Grizzlies next, so that's one that should be all but in their back pocket. And then they have San Antonio and the last game of the season with Houston. So Houston will probably sit all of their players, which makes it very possible.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it's hard to gauge who's sitting and who's not at this point, but that could happen. So you're saying in an ideal world, we could lose out, we could get as high as sixth.
Yes, we tie for sixth, meaning we would share those odds. So in the lottery with a tie, you don't do a coin flip for who picks where until after the simulation has been done. So if we're tied with Sacramento and New York for sixth, we will all get a share of the sixth odds. Obviously, they'll be a little less than what sixth would be if it was standing alone. But then, from there, if a team doesn't move up into the top three, that's where the coin flips and the tiebreakers all come in. But for the lottery portion itself, if we are tied at sixth, we just share the percentage of where sixth stands for the odds for first, second, and third. And if you win, you win. You know, that was just your ping pong ball with that amount of odds that moved up. Yeah. So realistically, yeah, we could tie for sixth. We could put ourselves with about a 20% chance to move into the top three.
So, I mean, the Knicks right now have the Heat at home, the Bucks at home, and then they finish off with the Cavs away and then the Cavs at home. Who knows if the Cavs are still going to be fighting for that spot. You know, they could be sitting, guys. We'll wait and see. But that looks like a pretty doable 0-4. You know, those are all playoff teams. So the Knicks, there's a good shot they'll lose out. You know, who knows what's going to happen? This is so bizarre. It's one of the worst things I've ever had to endure as a fan, you know, cheering for your team to lose game after game.
And then getting sick when they win.
Yeah, being disgusted that they won three in a row. And being attending a game and actually being upset is, like, the worst feeling in the world. Like, can't wait for this to be over.
I went to the Atlanta game early in the season, and after that whole experience of rooting for my team to lose, I was like, I'm not going again this year. I can't do this.
Yeah, agreed. How about the let's look at the Pelicans. Now, what's their, you know, obviously last night we had the Minnesota Timberwolves lose to Denver in one of the worst games I've ever witnessed, one of the worst coach games I've ever witnessed. You had Minnesota with arguably the best low post player in the NBA in Towns being guarded by Paul Millsap, and they chose to go to him maybe one out of every eight possessions or eight times they brought the ball down. It was some of the dumbest display of coaching I've ever seen, and we could continue to act like that guy's a good coach. He's not, and their defense sucks. You know, talk about being exposed with all that talent. It's a joke. It's a total joke, but enough of my rant. We'll get back to that in a second. Where are the Pelicans going to – are they going to make the playoffs?
They very well could fall off. The way that the tiebreakers work for the playoffs, tied between three teams. So let's say Denver loses one more game, and they all finish with 46 wins and 36 losses. Unless there is a divisional leader, clear divisional tiebreaker, which doesn't even involve the Pelicans. Denver and Minnesota are in the same division. So only that matters for them in sense of a tiebreaker. Then you move to conference. Pelicans have the worst conference record out of the three teams. So if all three, Denver, Minnesota, and New Orleans, tie to finish the season, New Orleans will fall into the lottery.
Hmm. Do you know who New Orleans has left? I could look it up pretty quick if you don't have that in front of you.
They have the Suns next, so that one they should probably win.
No doubt.
Then they have Golden State, the Clippers, and San Antonio. So losing two games is very realistic, depending on what these teams do. Obviously, the Clippers have fallen out of the playoff picture, so I don't know if they'll be going full blast. But it is very possible that New Orleans loses two out of their next four. Denver would then only be able to allow to lose one game, and same thing for Minnesota. So if they lose to Denver, Minnesota can't lose again. But they have, I believe, the Lakers and the Grizzlies.
They got the Lakers tonight, which is you know, on a back-to-back is not a layup. You know, Lakers are a decent team with no incentive to tank. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I expect them to win. They should win that or else somebody should be fired. But, you know, if they lose to the Nuggets again, you're right. I think there's a possibility the Timberwolves could fall out. even though they own like almost every tiebreaker. Do they own it with the Pelicans?
I believe that they do, but like I said, it in the conference, the Pelicans have the least amount of in-conference wins out of the Nuggets and the Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pretty much screwed if there's a tiebreaker.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's going to pain you, but you're going to have to root for your buddy Thibs to not lose more than one game in the last three here.
Well, I have very little faith in that. You know, I mean, they lost at home to Memphis a couple weeks ago. When that happened, I thought, you know, goodness gracious. Good news is for them is Butler's coming back. But to, you know, so, you know, just to back up on something, I've seen a lot of the Tibbs lovers, you know, the fake Bulls fans who have run off to support a team that hasn't been at a playoff since 2004, tweeting about how bad, what bad luck they've had. Oh, Minnesota with their rough luck. Minnesota's been one of the most healthy teams in this in the entire league. This league is filled with serious injuries. Butler's played over 2,000 minutes. Yeah, he's missed down the stretcher. He's missed a lot of games, probably because of the playing habits of his idiot coach. That said, Towns played every game. Wiggins played every game. You don't think the Clippers have had injuries? How about the Pelicans? They haven't had a major injury? I mean, how about San Antonio? And San Antonio is well ahead of them. Towns and Wiggins have played every game. They've got more talent on that team than almost every team they're fighting for a playoff spot with. Even Millsap played 1,000 minutes this year for Denver. And these people got the nerve to complain about the injury to Butler. Like no other team in the West has suffered with injuries. It's completely moronic. But
Well, you can't really absolve Tibbs of the Butler injury either, because he had knee soreness in which he was sitting out for before he had the actual injury. So that means Jimmy was rushed back without precaution, went right back to playing his 40 minutes.
That's exactly right.
Whatever was ailing in his knee finally cracked and said, I'm done. Now you get to sit down.
That's exactly right. But my general point is that you look at that West, every good team has had major injuries to one of their best three players. The Jazz had played large swaths of the season without Gobert. The Spurs, are you kidding me? You know, they're fifth seed without having their best player.
A top five player in the NBA.
It's insane to me. You're going to tell me that the Spurs with Gasol as their second best player have more talent than the T-Wolves? Come on. You know, give me a break.
Thibs definitely does not get a cop-out.
No way. The
starter piece that was voted by most GMs is the piece that they would want to start a franchise in Karl-Anthony Towns. He has a solid bench. He chooses not to use it. Ultimately, I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. It doesn't make sense to me. I watch the games and I just go, what is even going on here? Like, he stole every piece from the Bulls that he could to try to assemble a defense, and they're in the bottom 10 of the league. It's just, it's crazy.
Has Taj Gibson missed a game? I don't recall him missing one. He may have, but, you know, are you kidding me? Like, these guys that are, Taj Gibson, you know, who seem to be hurt quite a bit for the Bulls, you know, somehow at the age of 30-something is playing every game. So I don't want to hear it. If that team does not make the playoffs, that is one epic fail, and the owner, if he had any brain in his body, would immediately fire the GM/coach. That doesn't work for any teams. I mean, look at Stan Van Gundy. What a failure that bum has been in Detroit. You know, owing $90 million to guys like Jackson and Griffin up until 2020. Who else? Budenholzer, you know, failed in that job. That's not working, you know, that model. And
given the coach power of everything, definitely has not worked out for many teams very well. Not even for Doc Rivers.
No doubt. Enough about the T-Wolves. Let's get into the Bulls again in the draft. I want to hear your top five. Let's assume the Bulls somehow get a miracle and do win the lottery. I'd like to hear your top five. How do you rank it right now? Who are the top five draft players in the draft for you at Bull Scripted, Keith Front?
Top five for me overall, no fit included.
No fit. Just who would you take if you're a GM starting a team?
Ayton, number one. Doncic, two. Probably a healthy Michael Porter, three. Jaren Jackson Jr., 4. And without fit, I would have to put Bagley in my top 5.
Okay. I think that's pretty close to what I'd have, although I'd probably have Jackson ahead of Porter. And Porter might fall out of the top 5. I mean, you just have to be concerned, regardless of his back, even if he's healthy. He didn't look good. You know, he didn't look good playing in college basketball for an extremely limited amount of time that he played. You know, I was not impressed with him at all. Why am I jumping to conclusions on him?
I feel the same. I think a lot of people take what the media says. They know he came in as a top prospect. You know, they've seen videos of him dunking all over high school kids that are 5'11", and it's entertaining. It's exciting. He's a pretty boy. He's got the spotlight, so he's got the image. He's got the fame going on behind him, and sadly, that kind of stuff tends to propel prospects, similar to that it did to Lonzo Ball. So we'll see what happens. I do think the Bulls would be very fortunate if he falls in their lap. There's stuff all over the internet of Michael Porter wearing Chicago Bulls gear. There is actually even location things from his Instagram that he's been in Chicago several times the last month or two. Gar was at one of their practices before he returned in Missouri. So the Bulls have interest. I am concerned. I think it might be a trap because there was concerns before the injury, and then you throw the injury on top of there. And I don't know. At the end of the day, he is a 6'10", small forward, has all the athleticism in the world. If he stays healthy, I think the kid will be a star, but there's a lot of ifs.
Yeah. The next 5, a couple guys that people are really high on, I'm not. I don't understand the love for Sexton. I've watched, you know, I usually try to get as many games as possible in. I've seen him, I think, 5 or 6 times. And in general, my attitude about point guards is you need to be either an exceptional shooter like a, you know, Curry, or an exceptional uber athlete like a Westbrook. And I think he falls short in both categories. I think he's a good athlete. I don't think he's anything special, not like a Derrick Rose at you know, when he came into the league, or a Westbrook. And I don't think he shot 33% from 3 last year. That's not going to translate to the NBA. I'm not high in Sexton. Do you have him ahead or behind Trae Young?
I think you have to take him behind Trae Young. Trae did lead college in scoring and assists. I don't like Trae's fit for us. But for another team, I think Trae could be amazing. But ultimately, I'm hoping that both of those guys are eye candy. Steve Kuyler of the Insiders insists that the Magic, unless they move up to the top spot in the lottery, they want Colin Sexton. That their draft pick for him is his to lose, essentially. So how much truth there is to that, I know he is somebody that actually does speak with representatives in offices, but you never know what to believe out of that. But that is set, and that works in our favor, because if we can two point guards go ahead of us, we don't have a need for a point guard. That pushes either a big or one of the small forwards back to us. So we want people to be point guard crazy.
Amen. All right, my man, we're almost at 30 minutes. Time to wrap it up, but thank you for jumping on again. Anything else you're going to be watching this week that you want us to pay attention to, or should we just continue to cheer for the tank?
I mean, I'm kind of at the point where I'm not even cheering for the tank anymore. I've just let it go. What happens, happens. They went out. They went out. We can't pick worse than 9th entering the lottery, obviously. If a team below 9 jumps us, then we can get pushed back. But outside of that, I'm just going to enjoy the last few games. Hopefully Lowry continues to drop 20-plus points in the first half.
Or hopefully they bench him. I mean, he's killing the effort. He's the guy who's responsible for it.
No, he is. And I can agree that they definitely should have benched him. The half measures to this tank, trying to develop while tanking and not ever defining one directly, has definitely taken a toll. But at this point, we're pretty much praying to tie for 8th or 7th. 6th is extremely far-fetched. So I've taken my emotional attachment to it, and I've kind of just backed up. What's going to happen is going to happen. Hopefully the lottery falls our way, and if not, hopefully a Bamba or somebody like that falls in our lap.
Amen. All right, my man. Have a great weekend. All the best to you, brother. Thanks for coming on. You always bring the goods, and I'm looking forward to talking with you next week. Have a good one.
Yeah, we'll argue about McKellen Knox some more next week.
Sounds good, my man. Take it easy, brother.
Have a good one.
Have a good one.